Hey there, Sports History fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
We have another bonus day of the podcast as we discuss the greatest players to wear the number 15 in the NFL with Aaron Harris of the Football Odyssey podcast coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Aaron Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to this bonus coverage in our Football by Numbers series, where we discuss the greatest players ever to wear a certain jersey number. And today, our topic is the number 15s. And we have a great guest coming on today, a football historian, has his own website, has his own podcast, The Football Odyssey, and just a great all-around football historian. Aaron Harris joins us today, and you can find his podcast on the footballodyssey.com website and on a Sports History Network, and he shares some great insight on these number 15s, and I hope you enjoy this presentation we have for you. For this episode on our Football by Numbers podcast, we're going to talk about the 15s, and we have a special guest here from the Football Odyssey podcast on the Sports History Network. We have Aaron Harris. Aaron, welcome to the Pigpen.
Thanks for having me, Darren.
Hey, Aaron, if you could start off just to let our listenership know a little bit about what you do on the Football Odyssey. And
Yeah, man. So it's a podcast that originally started off as a blog last year. It was predominantly based around football history, talking about some of the foundations of the game, which I know you do on your website too, about the history of the line of scrimmage or maybe the history of the huddle, and some were more about the business side of it. Others were just, kind of obscure topics like the history of some minor league football teams or the history of football in Japan. And then I think it was June or July of 2020 where I decided to do a podcast to have a little more of an interactive side of it. And I wanted to carry the same sort of spirit that I do on the blog with the podcast, where I have people on from all different vantage points and backgrounds within football. So whether it's a former coach, a player, a fan, filmmaker, author, I wanted to have a good variety of guests that can offer a unique perspective on the game at every level. So that's just really what I'm trying to get out of it, just have good conversations about a wide variety of topics within our game of football.
Wow, nice. Now, what brought your interest to football, the passion that you have? Is there like any one thing or a group of incidents that sort of brought the Aaron Harris into the football realm of wanting to have a podcast and a blog?
Well, it probably goes back to when I must have been in fourth grade. I'm a Steeler fan, so the first game that I actually ever watched.
I like you more already.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, the first game I watched was the 2005 divisional game against Indianapolis when Jerome Bettis fumbled at the one-yard line.
Oh, yeah.
And Ben had to make that tackle.
Oh, you're, I'm getting a sick feeling in my stomach all of a sudden.
Yeah. Cato June just knocked that ball right out. Everybody got anxiety, and that was the first game because I had never really been a big football fan before that. My father would ask if I wanted to sit down and watch it, and I just didn't. But we were at a family event, and I ended up just watching the game with everybody. And I also had a neighbor that moved next to me that I went to school with who was a major football fan as well, so I would throw the football with him in the backyard. So I guess initially it was the camaraderie, and then when I got older, I played briefly in high school. I fell in love with the strategic part of the game. It's a game that has a lot of imagination and creativity behind it, so you could spend just hours investing yourself in it. And then just the history part of it too. It's a narrative that spans all the way back to, depending on who you talk to, but officially I guess 1880 when the game started to really take shape, and just the amount of people that have come and played football who have been associated with it, you know, the amount of organizations and institutions that have been built around it, you know, there's just never ending stories to hear. So
I'm glad you said 1880, because there's so many people that go back to that 1869 Princeton Rutgers game, which was basically a soccer game. The 1880s, like, really, that's when Walter Camp really put the stamp of what American football is. And that's a big distinction there. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, it seems that Harvard-McGill game is kind of like the official record that you can go off of to when it started to form what we view as football. Yeah, obviously, like you mentioned, it was essentially an 1869 soccer that had some sort of blocking. You know, you had guys that would interlock their arms in front of the guys that were dribbling the ball with their feet. You could hit it with your fist to pass to one another, but you couldn't catch it or grab it. So the 1880s is, I think, that era in which football really started to take shape as we would recognize it.
I totally agree. Everything that you say, some of your motivations and being a Steeler fan and saying 1880, I really feel we have a kindred spirit going on here. We're going to have a great discussion. But what we brought you on for today is we're going to talk about, we have our Football by Numbers series going on. We're trying to find the greatest NFL players in the 100 plus years of the NFL that have wore certain jersey numbers. And we're on the number 15 tonight. And we're sure glad you could join us. And
of course.
I guess what we want to do is we want to come up, you and I agree, and we may have some bartering going on and trying to convince one another, but we want to have a top 10 of the number 15s in NFL history. And I think we can do that. We've got some good players here to talk about. And sort of normally where we start is we look at, see what the Pro Football Hall of Fame has to say. And they have three players listed on the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website that wore the number 15 that are in the Hall of Fame. And the first one they have listed, I'm not sure how long he wore the number, because I don't see where he wore the number 15 on anything. But the Pro Football Hall of Fame is, I'm going to go with what they say more than what I can find. And that's Johnny Blood McNally they have as wearing the number 15. Another one, a very famous 15, is Bart Starr. Mm-hmm. And another one, maybe not as famous, is Steve Van Buren. And maybe those three are where we ought to start our discussion, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, number one, I think you would agree Bart Starr is the one that is probably ranked number one wearing 15.
Oh, absolutely.
And, yeah, I mean, the guy, you know, he's a five-time world champ. He's a guy that oftentimes gets labeled as a field general. And I think, you know, to a degree, deservingly so. But I think if you ask any, or if you listen to any of his teammates talk or any of his opponents, you know, they'll say he was the guy that did play the percentages, but he was a big play guy as well. Bill Curry, I think, mentioned once, and actually Zeke Barkowski, his backup, even said that if it was fourth and one and they were going to do a play action pass, Bart was going to hit that for a touchdown, or, you know, if not a long gain. And I think he had one season. I think the season they won the Super Bowl, the second world championship, I think he had only three interceptions out of like 260, 265 pass attempts, which is outstanding. Yeah.
And it certainly is.
Something that I think that's interesting about him that isn't really, or that offense in general, is Paul Zimmerman, in his book, The Thinking Man's Guide to Pro Football, he talked about the Packers passing game. That's actually a little more complex, because Lombardi gave his receivers the freedom to run option routes depending on the coverage they saw. So if they had zone coverage or if they had double man, they had the freedom to kind of change their routes depending on what they had, kind of like what the run and shoot offense was doing in the 80s. So for Bart to have to read the defense and then read his receivers' adjustments just shows his intellect that he provided to his team in the game. So, yeah, I think you have to put him at number one for 15.
I mean, just the take him out of the passing route. I mean, the guy's a gamer. The coldest game in one of the coldest games in NFL history, the Ice Bowl, he takes that scores a winning touchdown with, you know, seconds left. Yeah. You know, it had to be kind of painful running a ball after playing a full game like that in those temperatures. And it was pretty extreme. So, yeah, Bart Starr, I think, definitely top of the list. I agree with you there. Now, who'd you like to talk about next?
Well, for number two, I went to Steve Van Buren, and I went to him because he was the first back to have multiple 1,000-yard seasons. He was a two-time NFL champ, and he was the first back that actually had three consecutive rushing titles, which actually only a couple other backs have done since then. which is actually an impressive record because the NFL has had some great rushers over the course of their history. Yeah, he was the first player to have over 10 rushing touchdowns at a time when there was 12 games. And by the time he retired, you know, he had almost every rushing record by 1951. So a guy that really came in and dominated position, you have to put him, in my opinion, number two.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, played 8 seasons in the NFL and was a 5-time All-Pro. That's a pretty good percentage for being All-Pro.
Yeah,
60% or so, you know.
Yeah, you're putting up consistent numbers that way.
And also won the 2 championships, like you said, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of that offense was on his shoulders in Philadelphia. Great, great Eagle running back.
Yeah.
All right. Now, how about Johnny Blood McNally? We've had him come up on a couple other numbers. Warren Rogan just shared with us back in the numbers 10s or 11s, Warren Rogan had a real good story about Johnny McNally, Johnny Blood McNally, how he got his name and everything. That was kind of an interesting thing. What do you have on Johnny Blood?
I think he's a guy that kind of is lived on by his stories and his off the field antics than he is on the field, because, you know, guys coming from that, you know, pre-statistic era in the 20s and 30s, you're not going to find too many official numbers on them. But from what I gather, I went to the Packers website and saw some of his information that they provided. I guess unofficially, he actually had 33 picks by the time he retired, and he had 10 receiving touchdowns as a back in 1931. And I unofficially had over 2,400 yards from scrimmage. So the guy, in addition to being a character off the field, he definitely played hard, seemed to be a jack of all trades. So he was a guy that probably fit in perfectly with that sort of improvised game that was played back in that time.
And you know what? I just, as you were talking here, looking at his stats, I did find where he wore number 15, and it was with the Steelers in 1937.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see that earlier. Yeah, he's had just about every number in the book here, I think. So that's why we've talked about him quite a bit. Yeah. Warren Rogan had a really interesting story how he got his name. I guess what he said, it was him and his partner, what's the gentleman's first name? I think it was Ralph. Ralph Sand, maybe? Mm-hmm. I forget what it was.
The actor?
Another player. What they did is Johnny McNally and this whoever this other player was, they had they wanted to keep playing, have their college career go on, so they changed their names to get more eligibility out of it, because back then they really couldn't check. And they were driving by a movie theater and stopped and said, you know, Rudolph Valentino in Blood and Sand. So they each took the name,
okay.
You know, Johnny Blood took the name Blood, and the other gentleman took the last name Sand, and, you know, the rest is history. That's what they went on with the rest of their football careers and their pro football careers. It's kind of an interesting story.
Yeah, that's funny.
Warren tells it much better than I did, but that was the gist of it. But great player, Johnny Blood, a great name.
Yeah, it's funny, too, like when you talk about eligibility, how those guys would just travel from team to team. Like, you know, they would finish playing a game one day, then they would drive to the next town right after they finished that game to play with someone else.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. And
play multiple games in a week. You know, that's unheard of now. You can't even have multiple padded practices in pro game now. So.
Sure, if any.
All right. Okay, well, those are our 3 layups we had there. We had the Hall of Fame gave us. Now it gets a little more challenging. We have a list of 100 years of Players Award number 15. We need to maybe have some people to talk about to try to fill our list in here. So who would you like to talk about in award number 15 in NFL history?
Well, I think a lot of people, like history buffs, may criticize me for putting this player this high, but I got to put Mahomes on there at number 4. Purely because I think he's just the face of the game right now, and he has just all the attributes that you want to see from a quarterback. You know, physically, he's just perfect for the role. He's got a very intelligent mind for the game. You know, he's able to see pre-snap, post-snap. You know, he threw 50 touchdowns his very first year as a starter. You know, I think now he has 114 passing touchdowns and only 24 picks, which is outstanding.
Yeah,
and I know the game today obviously isn't as physical as some of the other guys, but you know, when you're going up against the you know, the amount of defenses that you have to recognize nowadays, and he has a good cast around him, but you know, the guy is just I just think he's a star in every sense of the word, and you know, he's 38-8 as a starter. So
3 AFC championship games, 2 Super Bowls, a Super Bowl MVP, you know.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you know, I'm really curious to see, you know, 10 years down the road. Obviously, I don't think anybody is going to be pushing 20 plus years like Tom is, but you know, if he gets a 15-year career, I mean, he might put some of the records in the record books out of reach for anybody for a while.
Oh, certainly may. Yeah. Now, I've discussed this when we had Fran Tarkington. We talked about Fran Tarkington in number 10s. I don't know if you ever saw Peyton Manning's television program, Peyton's Places. They're in season 2 on ESPN+. And he goes and visits a football legend usually, and they go and talk about that person's career, and he has some fun with them. When Fran Tarkington, they took a video of Fran Tarkington in his heyday, the way he scrambled, and put Patrick Mahomes' scrambling ability side by side. It was uncanny. I watched Fran Tarkington play. I remember him playing. I remember the Steelers playing him in Super Bowl IX, and almost the same dropback. You know, it's their first escape route's like straight back, and then they've twist and turn and have these sharp turns of drive defenders crazy, and then launch a ball with a flick of the wrist on target 40 yards downfield, and it's just uncanny. But yeah, I definitely agree. Mahomes should be on that list and high because he's one of the greatest 15s already in his short career.
Just to go off the comparison between Mahomes and Fran Tarkington, do you think that early Ben Roethlisberger and Fran Tarkington could be compared in that same light too?
I don't know if I would say Ben was more of a lumbering quarterback. He still is, but even his younger years, he was just a brute. For Fran Tarkington, was a smaller quarterback that just was very agile and just like many defenders. I think Deacon Jones said he was a real pain in his ass, because he couldn't catch him. It was like catching a chicken, So
yeah. Well, the play that made me think of possibly a comparison was the Super Bowl play against the, I think Super Bowl 43 against the Cardinals, where Ben was, it was third down, and he's like scrambling, he's turning all over the place, and he hits a first down to Heath Miller over the middle. It was early in the game. To me, it just looked like such a backyard play where he's like spinning in every direction. And when I see like the old highlights of Fran Tarkington, it's the same ordeal. Just kind of looks like he's spinning in every which direction, but he always makes it.
That's interesting. You're maybe right there. You have some comparisons that they, once they leave the pocket, they have that just, uncanny ability of making a play. But yeah, you're right. That Roethlisberger has those qualities that I just don't think of him as the scrambler that Fran Tarkington was or Mahomes are.
It has been years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Todd Haley cracked the whip.
Yeah, that's for sure. And this past year, it's just get rid of the ball, two-step drop and fire it.
And 2 steps is being generous.
Right. All right, so far on our list, just to review, we have Steve Van Buren, we have Johnny Blood McNally, Bart Starr at the top, and now we've added Patrick Mahomes into our mix. So now we have 4 of our 10 spots filled up. Who else would you like to talk about as one of the greatest 15s?
So I have Jack Kemp on there. And what stands out to me is that he actually had 40 rushing touchdowns, and I'm not sure where that fits all the time. I mean, I would imagine it has to be at the very least a top 10, and if anything, I'd almost say it's a top 5. But yeah, that's an impressive stat that I wasn't really expecting when I was looking him up. And he also had a 15 yards per completion, which is an insane rate to have.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big play guy. He won a couple AFL titles, AFL MVP, a couple All Pros. His numbers weren't as impressive with some of the other players of his time, but he made himself a recognizable name, and he was able to stick around for a long time. So you got to give him credit for that.
Absolutely. I think that's I also had him on my list too. Yeah, I think he was definitely a gamer and went on to be a U.S. Was a House of Representatives or Senator. He was
Kemp was something
in the government. So he made a name for himself even after football. So, but he was a great leader. I don't remember much of him playing, but things you read about him. In our area, I'm 100 miles away from Buffalo, and people still talk about Kemp as
is that true?
Quarterbacks. Yeah. So. So yeah,
that seems like a town that's always going to remember their heroes, no matter what era they played in.
Right. They definitely do. They might want to forget about OJ now, but the other ones they do remember.
I don't know, man. There's still a lot of people that have feelings for him as a player. Watching him as kids. I mean, there's some people that just remember him as that iconic running back and just a stellar career.
Definitely
he had.
Was.
Yeah,
as a player, even his USC days, great player.
Yeah, It's weird for me because, you know, as long as I've been alive, he's always been, you know, OJ the murderer, but, or I should say, you know, OJ the man.
He was always the murderer, but sort of a nefarious outlook to him. So I agree.
And a rapper as well. So.
Oh, I don't know if I know that part of OJ, but maybe I don't want to. But I definitely agree. Kemp should be on that list, too. Okay, so now we got five of them locked up for our NFL's greatest number 15s in history. Who do we want to talk about next that could possibly be on that list?
Well, the one other person I had, because, you know, getting a top 10 list was kind of a struggle for this number, but one person I had as sort of like a number six or like honorable mention was Earl Morrill.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I think he has some pretty interesting superlatives for a guy that was kind of a journeyman. He was actually voted the MVP for the Dolphins when they went 17-0, and that's an impressive feat because, you know, when Greasy went down and he came in, you know, that's not a, and he came in for an extended period of time. I think he came in for like 9 games, maybe even more than that. So like you know, he definitely had to fill in some pretty big shoes, but he did it. You know, he led the Colts to that 68 season that ultimately ended in massive disappointment, but, you know, they still had a stellar season that year. And, you know, he came in and relieved Johnny Unitas in the biggest game in Super Bowl V and led them to a victory. So, you know, he's a guy that was definitely a journeyman, maybe didn't have, you know, a stellar career, but, you know, he definitely had his moments.
Yeah, those were definitely, those were his two all-pro seasons, you know, with the Colts when they, that season where they lost to the Jets in the Super Bowl and that undefeated Miami season. He went 9-0 in that season, all-pro both those seasons as a backup quarterback, not too shabby. Yeah. And he played all over the place, you know, the Giants and the Lions, Steelers, San Francisco brought him in. He was a very solid quarterback, but sort of coming off the bench, he was sort of that guy, you know, the hero that would be the serviceable guy to keep the team.
Yeah, he's almost like Nick Foles before Nick Foles in a way.
Yeah, that's a very good similarity there. Yes, absolutely. All right, I agree with you. I think Earl Morrill should be on our list, and that takes us to, I lost count now, six, I believe. Mm-hmm. So we have four spots that we can talk about here.
Who do you think that we should put on there?
Well, now these are kind of stretches because, like you said, it's kind of slim pickings here. But I think that Brandon Marshall ought to be under consideration to be on here. And Brandon wore the number 15 for 12 seasons. Okay, and let's just go over some of his numbers. 970 receptions. 12,351 yards, 83 touchdowns. He's made it to 6 Pro Bowls and was an All-Pro once in his career. He's bounced around a little bit. Played for Denver, Miami, Chicago, the Jets, the Giants, and his latest gig was with Seattle in 2018. I believe he retired then. I think he had a good enough career to make this list of number 15s in my book.
Yeah, I think 12,000 yards is definitely his most impressive career statistic. Yeah, he did have some really good years. I think Denver and Chicago were probably his two most solid destinations that he had in his career. I don't think he was ever probably in the top five receivers when he was playing, but he was always a guy that you knew was gonna come out and give you some good production. He was always a safe guy to pursue if you were ever, you know, trying to get someone in free agency, or you can always rely on him. Yeah, I think he's deserving of the top 15.
And I have to mention this, or our partner on the Sports History Network, Jeremy McFarlane, will get mad, but Jay Cutler's the one who threw him a lot of those touchdown passes. So, Jeremy, there's your spotlight for your guy, Jay Cutler. He loves Jay Cutler. So,
yeah, I like Jay in a lot of ways, too.
And another name that I had up, and this is going a little old school, is Babe Parilli. Babe played from 1952 to 1969, wore that number. That didn't have the greatest record. He was 49-45-7 as a starter. But he did make it to 3 Pro Bowls, was an All-Pro 1 year, was a Super Bowl champion, and won an AFL championship that quarterback position. You know, he played, started off in Green Bay, played a season in Cleveland in the 50s, you know, in the Jim Brown era. Mm-hmm. Went back to Green Bay, played with Oakland in the AFL when they started out, played with the Boston Patriots through much of the 60s in the AFL, and then finished up with the Jets. You know, his one Super Bowl win was the 69 Jets, sitting behind, it was a backup to Joe Namath, of course. Was a very serviceable quarterback, and he's probably in contention. Had 220 interceptions, 178 touchdowns. Wasn't a great ratio there. Almost got that reversed. But I think sort of the, you know, having the three Pro Bowls and the one All-Pro and an AFL championship that he was a starter on definitely puts him in the mix. I'm on the fence about him, but...
Yeah, well, I think given the slim pickings, you would definitely include him. I mean, if you're on the Boston Patriots in the 60s, you're definitely going to be throwing more interceptions than you are touchdowns.
Yeah, but, that's for sure.
they did have some good years, though. I'm not sure if – was he on the team when they won a championship in the early 60s, didn't they? Or they lost to the Chargers, actually. Was he on that team?
Yeah. But he was on Boston from 1961 through 1967 season. So that first year of the AFL, he was in Oakland. He was a Raider.
Okay.
And then his last 2 years of the AFL, right before the merger, he was a Jet.
So, gotcha, okay. Well, he got a championship after all, so.
Yeah, yes, he did. Yeah. I'm not sure where the championship was.
With the Jets?
It could be maybe they did. 66, did Boston win it in 66, the AFL? I'm not that familiar with the AFL.
No, Oakland did.
Championships.
Oakland. The 65 to 66 season was the Chiefs, and then the 67, or the 66 to 67 year was Oakland. You know, some people count the actual calendar year when the championship game is played. Some people count when the season actually started, so.
Okay.
All right, it's kind of weird. Sometimes you can never – I have to clarify, but, yeah, the 1966 season, I believe, going into 1967 was Oakland winning and losing to Green Bay in the second Super Bowl.
Okay, but he would have been on Boston at that time. Oakland was only in 1960. He was only one season in Oakland.
Oh, okay.
So maybe it was the Jets. Maybe that's the AFL championship they're talking about when they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, most likely. And I think that's the game. I think they beat the Raiders to get there, too.
Yeah, I think you're right. You're right. Yeah. So maybe that's the one that they have on the Pro Football Reference is who I'm looking at on that. But all in all, I think, you know, Babe Parilli is definitely a candidate to be on that list of one of those four spots. We'll come back to him later and see if we still want to consider him. You know, so we got some other names that I'm not sure about here. You know, we got like Jeff Hostetler, who did win a Super Bowl. With the Giants.
A couple weeks ago, I actually rewatched that game, and he actually I think I'd seen that game once before, but I rewatched it a couple weeks ago, and he actually did a lot better than I have remembered. You know, I think obviously Otis Anderson had a terrific game in the defense too, but you know, I think Jeff actually pulled his own weight in that game as well. You know, he played very smart, and I haven't seen any of his other games. You know, I guess for being in the right place at the right time and fulfilling his role, we could definitely put him on there.
Yeah, I mean, as a record, 51-32 as a starter, 94 touchdowns in his career, 71 interceptions. You know, not great, but not horrible. Not Babe Parilli horrible. Had that Super Bowl victory. And, you know, he was one Pro Bowl. You know, he was on two Super Bowl winning teams, one of the Raiders teams, or maybe it was the early Giants, one of the early Giants.
Maybe the 86 Giants.
Yeah, he was on the Giants from 85 through 92, so it must have been that first Super Bowl under Parcells that the Giants won. So, but we're 15 his whole career, so it's a good long career. So, I'm leaning towards maybe we ought to put him on the list now because that's not a bad career for had some good years with the Raiders.
He also played some snaps at a receiver too, didn't he?
He could have. I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was a. He was a pretty athletic guy. He was kind of deceivingly fast, I guess you'd say, or athletic, but I think I read somewhere that he actually played a little receiver, too.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if it was for the Giants or if he was in college, but I think he's definitely played receiver at some point.
Huh, I did not know that. I'll have to check that out later. But I think he's probably worthy that we could probably put him on there and maybe fill that seventh spot with Mr. Hostetler. The other one I'm thinking of is Michael Crabtree has wore number 15. He wore it for 10 seasons in his career. Some of his numbers, you know, he's 7,499 yards, 54 touchdowns, 637 receptions. Kind of a hot and cold receiver. You know, came out with San Francisco those first 4 or 5 years and was just, lights out. Played a few with Oakland and then Baltimore and Arizona at the end of his career. In 2019 is when his career ended. But, with the slim pickings, he is definitely in there. I don't show him making a Pro Bowl or being an All-Pro or anything like that, but decent receiver, maybe under consideration.
Yeah, I think he had some solid years, especially when he was in San Francisco. I mean, yeah, I think if it weren't for Seattle, I think San Francisco, I shouldn't say only for Seattle, but San Francisco, those 3 or 4 years with Harbaugh, had some tremendous, tremendous talent. And he was definitely a guy that, gave, Alex Smith and Kaepernick, some good games. You know, he was always hustling. He was a pretty good receiver, I think. I mean, I think a lot of people remember him too, whenever, that NFC championship game, I think it was 2014 when, Richard Sherman had tipped the pass at the corner of the end zone.
Oh yes. Yes.
And then he had that post game on the best corner in the game. And he was just talking smack about Crabtree.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Now, this is kind of an interesting thing, just looking at his stats. He never once in his career had double-digit touchdowns in a season. He had nine receptions in two different seasons and eight receptions in two different seasons, and the rest are, lower than that. But never double-digit touchdowns in one season, which kind of surprises me.
Yeah. I guess maybe he was more of like the possession type. Which is kind of strange because he also played. He had a couple seasons where he played with Anquan Boldin, and Anquan Boldin in his own right was a really good receiver. But I think he was definitely more of a possession guy too, sort of kind of Mr. Reliable catch and get the tough yard sort of receiver.
Definitely, but I think maybe he's on our consideration list too. We got him and Pirelli on our list here because we still got to find three more here. Golden Tate is another wide receiver that's kind of a similar career path as Crabtree. Just some numbers of him. He's had 695 career receptions, 8,278 yards receiving, 46 touchdowns, has been to one Pro Bowl and one Super Bowl. So he's
currently
with the Giants.
Yeah, I think I would put Tate on before I'd put Crabtree on.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
I think his best days were probably when he was in Seattle.
Yeah, most definitely. I agree with you.
Yeah, and he played for the Lions a couple of years ago, right?
Yes.
Before, he had some good years with the Lions too. He was always a guy that was capable. Always he was always good enough to stand out in the league. Kind of like Brandon Marshall was never a guy that was a top five or even a top 10 receiver, but he did well for himself.
Yeah, he had 4.5 seasons with Detroit till they traded him to Philadelphia in the middle of the 2018 season. All right, I'm gonna put him on our standby list here when we're coming down to our decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
For our three, another gentleman that wore for quite a while that's sort of a big name in football is Tom Flores, who's known a little bit more as a coach than he is for his playing days, but he was a quarterback that played. He played for, of course, the Raiders for about six seasons and played with Buffalo in the AFL for a couple seasons, 67, 68, after their championship years. And then Buffalo and Kansas City in 69. So played on some good, great AFL teams, with those three in the 60s. His numbers are he had, 93 touchdowns, 92 interceptions, and his record as a starter was 31-33. So maybe it wasn't such a great quarterback, but a pretty good coach.
Yeah, he strove just to be like a little bit better than average. I mean,
right.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with his playing career really at all, but definitely as a coach, he's a guy that I think you have to have respect for. I mean, those Raiders teams in the 80s weren't a team to mess with. But, to play in the AFL during those days, you definitely had to have an arm to be in that league. So, I guess he definitely proved some worth.
He's in the Hall of Fame, but I believe it's probably for his coaching and not his playing.
Yeah, that's recent, isn't it?
I don't have that number up in front of me.
I think that was in the past year, maybe this most recent class that he was just elected in.
It could be. Okay. Yeah. So the class where Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson went in as coaches, maybe. That was the 2020 class.
Yeah, either that one or I think the most recent one they have now, the one with, I think, Peyton Manning's
going in. Oh, the 2021 class.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I think he's in that group.
Okay. And, you know, one Pro Bowl as a player, a Super Bowl, and an AFL championship. I guess he had some good hardware from a player, but I don't know that I'd even put him under consideration, but definitely want to mention him because he is a big name that's on that list.
Yeah.
Another one that I remember because of he played on the Rams against the Steelers in the Super Bowl 14, I believe it was, is Vince Ferragamo. He was kind of an interesting story, you know, back in the day. He was 27 and 26 as a starter, a little over 11,000 yards, 76 touchdowns, 91 interceptions. That's probably why he wasn't a starter for very long. But he did lead a team to the Super Bowl, and made a game of it in the second half. You know, the Steelers were dominating and brought the Rams back. I think it was late in the third quarter, if I remember correctly. Worth mentioning.
He's not a guy that I'm familiar with. I've seen the Super Bowl, but... The Rams that year seemed to be kind of a dark horse team to make the Super Bowl. But, I mean, give them credit where credit is due.
I guess another dark horse I'm going to throw out there is another sort of old-time quarterback. Craig Morton wore number 15 for two seasons. You know, Craig was sort of another one of those journeyman quarterbacks. His overall quarterback record, not bad, 81-62-1. Threw for just under 28,000 yards, 183 touchdowns, 187 interceptions, but did take the Denver Broncos to play in a Super Bowl late in his career. He played with Dallas for many, many seasons, through mid-60s to the early 70s, got the center warmed up for Staubach to come in there. And then played a couple years with the Giants and then Denver for the last 6 years of his career.
I think he was also the quarterback when they lost to Baltimore in Super Bowl V.
I believe you're right. I believe you're right.
Yeah, I would definitely put him in there. I mean, he's kind of a guy that I think is kind of lost between Don Meredith was before him, correct?
Yeah, Meredith, I think, was before that.
Yeah, I think, he's kind of like lost between Staubach and Meredith. But, yeah, I mean, he had some good years in Dallas, and he took, you know, two different organizations to Super Bowl. So, yeah, I would definitely put him in there.
Okay, so maybe we'll lock him in there for our eighth spot.
Right, yeah.
And I don't have really any other ones that there's plenty of players, but I don't have any other ones that are jumping out at me that should be, you know, there's like your Neil Lomaxes and, you know, some Mike Phipps and, you know, some kickers and punters in there that, you know, definitely great players, but I don't know if they're the greatest, you know, to wear the number 15 in the NFL.
So who do we have on the standby list?
On our standby list, we have Babe Parilli, Michael Crabtree, and Golden Tate.
I've definitely put
two of those.
I would put Golden Tate in there.
Golden Tate, okay.
Yeah, I would.
All right, I don't disagree with you on that. And one more spot for our between Parilli and Crabtree.
What about Bob? I mean, I guess we'll have to show some love for the older guys. I'm biased towards the older guys, so I'm gonna give it to Bob.
All right, I agree with you. I think that's probably a fair assessment there because. Yeah. He didn't have the greatest numbers, but he had some hardware to go with that. So I have it as our top 10. Here's our official list. That the Aaron and Darren top 10 15 players in the NFL. Steve Van Buren, Johnny Blood McNally, Bart Starr, Brandon Marshall, Jack Kemp, Babe Parilli, Jeff Hostetler, Patrick Mahomes, Earl Morrall, Golden Tate, and Craig Morton.
There we go. It's done.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. We're going to have you back. I think you want to talk about number 16s on our next episode. And we get in there, we'll talk about what you got going on with the Football Odyssey, what you got coming up next.
Can't wait.
All right, so I appreciate you being on, and we'll see you next episode.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on.
What an excellent discussion we had with Aaron Harris. We really appreciate him joining us. And you can hear more of Aaron Harris on the Football Odyssey podcast on sportshistorynumber.com. But in just a couple days, Aaron's going to join us once again for the greatest players that wore the number 16 in football history and the NFL's history. And that is even a better conversation because there is some really big names that wore the number 16 as well. And we think you really enjoy that one. And make sure you join us each and every day here. You can find us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. You can email us at pigskindispatch.com is a website you can find us at, and on the sportshistorynetwork.com. And make sure you hit up that your favorite podcast provider to either follow or subscribe to our podcast, because some days like today we're dropping two podcasts in one day, and we want to make sure that you don't miss them and you get that football history into your headsets each and every day, sometimes multiple times a day. And that's all we have for today. And so till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.